It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Have I got you?
Yep.
I wonder if I dialed the right number.
No.
Alan, I'm going to dial in again.
Okay.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. And I am apologized for this little mix-up. I think it was 1 minute after nine, Alan.
Oh, okay.
When I checked the computer clock. Today is Wednesday, folks, and it is the 31st of May in the year 2006. And I hope you've had a nice weekend. If you celebrate the Memorial Day weekend, it's difficult to think about what we could actually be celebrating. Well, not celebrating. I guess it's in memory of, but it just turns into a big celebration, doesn't it? Anyway, I was looking for our card tonight for our spiritual message. Here, it's from A Course in Miracles. Miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. And by miracles, it's not talking about people walking on water, although it could be that too, I suppose, but it is an expression of love between individuals. I was going to say between brothers, but that is the definition of a miracle in A Course in Miracles. Alan, thanks for being here with us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Memorial Day weekend.
Uh-huh.
You know what's so sad is that, well, of course, on Memorial Day, I guess it's just a cause for celebration. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people really stop to think of, or too many people stop to think what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But we're supposed to remember the brave soldiers who fought to preserve our freedom and our liberty. Our freedom, Alan.
The agenda, yeah.
Yeah, the agenda.
Uh-huh.
And that's sad.
I know. I when you have the Remembrance Day here and everywhere else in the Commonwealth countries, I looked at all these old men with their uniform. Well, they wear a blazer and a little hat, and
mm-hmm.
have all their medals on. And when they're spoken to, they have never really studied up on anything after the war.
No.
World War II.
No.
And the same propaganda that were fed then, they will repeat it verbatim. it's quite amazing to
yes.
see how it never changed with them.
Yes.
They didn't realize they were bringing in the United Nations.
And actually, the United Nations was already at work, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, they had it on past newsreels during World War II, and sometimes you'll see old reruns and stuff, where the narrator will actually call it the United Nations.
Oh, they'd make a mistake, you mean?
Not really. I mean, they signed that deal in, 1941?
Sometime or other, but mm-hmm. the thing that I remember specifically, well, not then, of course, but in Major Jordan's diary, and it was Major Jordan had volunteered. He was a businessman. He was a World War I veteran,
uh-huh.
and he was assigned to United Nations Depot 84 or something like that at an airport in New Jersey, Alan.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that was during the war.
Uh-huh.
And that was where they did so many. That's where they sent so much over to Russia, or to the Soviet Union, I should say.
Yeah, from the base in Alaska.
Right, under the Lend-Lease Act.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you lent to Russia, it was like lending a cigarette to somebody.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, actually, the Lend-Lease Act was supposed to be lending to Britain, I believe it was.
Well, they did a deal with Stalin, too, though. Yeah.
But it wasn't known. The deal wasn't known. The deal with Stalin wasn't known.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is there was a documentary on some ship that was a high-tech ship, a private-owned ship that was looking for ships sunk on the route from the U.S. to Britain, to Greenland, etc., all on the way to the Soviet Union. And what it was, it said that they were carrying bullion, gold bullion, to the Soviet Union during World War II, and some of them sank or were hit by torpedoes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And they actually found one, and they did manage to get a lot of the gold up. And there's tons and tons and crates of the gold bars. Now, what was the Soviet Union doing with all this gold when they didn't use gold within Russia?
Right.
You know.
And on top of that, they sent the printing presses and the paper over of the U.S. Treasury so that they could print and draw directly from the U.S. Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
The printing presses and the paper.
Uh-huh.
And then there was all of the information for the bomb, along with all of the materials necessary to build it.
Well, I don't think they even had to sneak it in. I mean, I used to wonder about the supposed threat of communism. And every book that you read, because it was never taught in school, really, so you had to go into libraries to find out what communism was. And supposedly, all these authorized historians were telling you that the Cold War was going to be fought with high technology and science, and whoever had the height of science would be the victor. And yet every year in Britain, you'd read in the newspapers of the annual meeting where all the West top scientists were going over to Russia for their meeting. So you would never allow your top scientists to go over to an enemy's camp.
Right.
If you depended upon those scientists for secrecy, it's impossible.
Right.
So the whole thing was an utter farce.
Yes, it was, but it was pretty scary to people.
It
was scary to people that didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I got an email from someone in Texas who was talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Alan, I was just thinking about that.
Uh-huh.
That was the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And he said he was at school then, he says, and, you know, they got all their inoculations, then they were told, oh, my goodness, we might get nuked any time.
That's practiced, right.
They practiced drills of hiding under their tables in the school and all this kind of stuff, only to find out years later that the supposed missiles in Cuba were dummies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's all to do with terrorizing the
exactly.
public.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can recall that time, and I can recall that throughout every day you were almost flinching, expecting what they were saying was going to happen if the Soviet Union didn't back off.
Yeah.
It was a very, very frightening time, and of course we all heaved a sigh of relief when it was over.
When the wall came tumbling down, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Just by magic, though.
Yeah.
And so, the whole thing was just the antithesis, you know, and now we're going into the synthesis, and that was the whole, that's why it was set up in the first place.
Yeah.
They couldn't even feed themselves during the whole Cold War.
You mean the Soviets?
Yeah, I mean,
right.
Canada and the States used to put bids in every year. All the farmers, the biggest farmers, for grain shipments to the Soviet Union. And in fact, their economy depended upon it. And they got subsidies from governments and so on to do so. So, they couldn't even make a good television set, you know.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. I've got a book here by Cleon Skousen. It's called The Naked Communist.
Uh-huh.
And basically, it the evidence there abounds that if it hadn't been for all of the aid that came over from the Republic, it would have died its own death.
Yes, it would have.
Communism would have, the whole thing would have just collapsed.
And right from the beginning, the West was heavily involved with different fundraisers, etc., and hand in glove with government to keep the whole communist regime going, or Bolshevist, from the beginning. So, and they should send, you know, ships over with food, clothing, shoes, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Big drive.
I wonder how the people were a little, they didn't know the whole story, of
no.
course, but I can remember when I was real little, there was a co-op grocery store up on the highway near that housing project we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my dad say, they wouldn't even go in the store. It's a bunch of GD communists running the thing. And you heard the word communist quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we didn't get anything really in Britain. Occasional little blurb in the paper when you found out that your top MI5 and MI6 guys were defecting to the Soviets, until it became a boring routine. And that's when I caught on to the fact that they were all hand in glove with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're all one in the same company. And during the 60s, there was four guys defected, top agents of Britain. Kim Philby was, I think, the last one. And he basically was put in charge of the KGB at one point. This guy from Britain. And again,
you mean he defected to the Soviet Union?
Yeah, they're on the trail, an MI5 and MI6. They're on the trail of, they knew there was a bunch of, all this information was going right to Russia, right to the Soviets. And eventually, as it came down on each one of these men over the period of a couple of years, somebody tipped them off from the top, and they absconded off to the Soviet Union. And the fifth man, the book called The Fifth Man, they knew there was a fifth man there somewhere, and it was written about Baron Rothschild, and he was claimed to be the fifth man. And he was one of the exceptions to the Rothschild family. He was a scientist during World War II. And after World War II, he was put in charge of the main security agencies of Britain to fight the Bolsheviks and or the communists. And he was the only guy who could be tipping off these particular
right,
agents.
Right.
So a book came out about him years later, and it's called The Fifth Man.
Now, who were the four other men?
Oh, one was Blake. He was recruited from. They all had phony names. And,
okay.
And, of course, the MI6 just couldn't find that out, eh?
Right.
But they'd all been trained at Cambridge University. That was the common denominator. and they were being trained. Cambridge was set up, basically, always to train the elite's offspring to run the system, the old empire. And each one was being trained at the university, just like Lawrence of Arabia. He was picked as a young boy and sent there and trained in Aramaic, etc. So these guys were the same. They were trained in the supposed espionage system, and then they went straight into MI5 or MI6. But Philby eventually ended up as the head of the KGB for one at one point. The guy who was MI5 and MI6. So it's ludicrous to think they were separate, and that's the conclusion you come to, because the only people who knew that a raid was going to take place on any agent was put in two boxes at the end of the night and delivered straight to their destination. One of the boxes went to the Queen, and the other one went to the head of MI6.
Now, what was the difference between MI5 and MI6?
MI5 is the 5 points of masonry.
Okay, but is there...
But it's internal. It's like the FBI.
Are they two separate, or...?
They're intertwined, obviously. The FBI would be the equivalent of MI5.
What does MI stand for?
Oh, there's about 10 different explanations. It's even harder to get it yet, what exactly it stands for. There's official ones, then semi-official, then the real ones. And
well, give us one of them.
Well, you have the Sequentin Master Instructor and Masonic this and that Institute.
Oh.
Because everybody in it, according to Peter Wright, that belonged to it, he wrote about it. In fact, he wrote about it, and Thatcher brought him into court because he was giving out information that he didn't want disclosed. And Peter Wright, who was not a Mason, was into... It's very much like the James Bond thing where Miss Moneypenny gives you all your certificates and so on. And the woman who was in charge of this part says, you're a Mason, of course. And Peter Wright said, no. She said, well, you've got to be a Mason. Everybody here is a Mason. And he wrote about that in his book.
Wow.
And in fact, Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher, eventually brought him up to court because it was his second book. But when it was called the A to Z of Spy Catching, and they confiscated all the second books and pulped them. They pulped a whole lot of them. He was in the High Court in England for that.
So you're saying, in order to be MI5 or MI6,
mm-hmm.
they had to be a Freemason.
Yeah, that was the rule. He was an exception because he was an electronics expert.
Mm-hmm.
In specific areas, and they needed him in the organization. His father was a Mason. He tells you about that.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in it was a Mason. And then you jump to Leon Trotsky, and you read his memoirs, and Trotsky talks about how he joined Freemasonry while in prison. And he started to write books on Masonry, praising it. And even when he was getting escorted out of Russia by the police, he said, my escorts went through three different borders and countries by giving Masonic signs to the guards. So everything is Freemasonry.
Yeah. I know I've said this before. We're talking about MI5. It's on my mind, so I want to say this for maybe our newer listeners.
Uh-huh.
John Coleman.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote the book. The Committee of 300.
Uh-huh.
And I want our listeners to know this. First of all, I find that's interesting because then we could presume that probably, at least most probably, he's a high Freemason.
Uh-huh.
But in his book, the Committee of 300, I have the first edition of the book.
Uh-huh.
And in that book, he said... that he actually said that he had been with MI5,
uh-huh.
and that's why he had access to as much information as he had.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said, what you told us, Alan, is that in the elite core, most every one of them are homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Effie came to visit, and she brought me the book.
Uh-huh.
But she had the third edition. And I said, well, Effie, I already have it. And then I got to wondering, would there be any edits made since that book first came out? And sure enough, we sat down. I read aloud. She followed along. Just the introduction. And in the first edition, it was what I said there was. In hers, in the third edition, he didn't mention MI5.
Uh-huh.
He said because of the nature of his work, that he had access to a lot of inside information,
yeah.
And there was not a peep in there about the sexual preferences of the elite.
Well, you know, the BBC maybe did a documentary on one of these defectors of the 60s, and that was Philby, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he'd been recruited again at Cambridge, I think it was. All of his buddies at the top there were homosexual. He was one too, and they displayed it fully in their documentary.
Really?
And he was picked up, and he was doing the double agent thing, working for MI6 and working for the Soviets at the same time. And I think that was the deal at the top. It's to make sure that nothing did go wrong by somebody who wasn't in the know. It was to make sure that they were both equally informed at the top. That's the conclusion I came to.
I lost that.
Well, you see, the boys at the bottom have to believe everything's real as well.
Right.
And there you have all these different groups in their silos and nuclear bunkers and all this kind of stuff. And
okay.
Doing drills, yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
And they've got to believe it's all real. So you have to have a group at the top that belong to both sides.
Right.
If you want to manage them both. It's the only way you could keep it all under wraps, you see.
Yep.
And that's the conclusion I came to. And then when that book came out called The Fifth Man on Victor Rothschild, it really explained so much, because even most of the defectors that they were on the trail of while in Britain before they defected, they'd all been lodgers in Victor Rothschild and his wife's house when they were students. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So Victor Rothschild was the guy that was passing all the high-level information over to the Soviets, and being a scientist himself, he was one of the main characters involved in the Porton Down LSD and bacterial experiments. That was his job. He was a scientist, first of all. It wasn't until much later he went back into the banking system. Hello?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah, I can hear crackles. I think you were talking.
Oh, the crackles and it's the storm.
Uh-huh.
No, I was just listening and taking in what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine that they're never very far away from the banking business.
It's essential. There was a system of what they call civilization. And what we think is normality revolves around economics. And the banking system has always been paramount. And you cannot, every prime minister has to go to the banker first, cap in hand, to make sure he's going to get all his loans. So that's really how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even Karl Marx was given way too much acclaim because his name wasn't put on the Communist Manifestos for years later. Karl Marx said the same thing, that every system that's ever existed in civilization has evolved around the economic system.
Well, yes, it has.
Yeah.
When wasn't there one, Alan?
Well, definitely pre-Sumer anyway, you know.
Right.
We know that, and probably pre-Hurrian, as they call them now, the people before Sumer, because even they were known to be traders that traveled vast areas.
Where did the Hurrians live?
They covered the same area all the way from at least Egypt, all the way to China. They were doing trading, and they're still unearthing whole towns yet in archaeology of the people that predated the Sumerians. So. Who knows? See, we're far, far older than we're being told. The human race is far, far older.
Yes.
And, of course, it was Darwin that was brought up front to make us believe we're all scraping our knuckles along the jungle floor not too long ago. And that was to throw us off the track that the people have been around for maybe even millions of years.
Yes.
Like this.
Well, and then we have the rabbis to Pharisees, I guess, today, they call them rabbis, that claim to know the exact date and time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Alan, even for somebody to say that sounds so ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
There was creation, if you would.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because they say that it was 6,000 years ago. Uh-huh. There was no date. There was no time.
Yeah.
And they say they know the exact date and time
mm-hmm.
that the world was created.
Yeah, and the same thing happened in the Christians with Bishop Usher.
Really?
Yeah, he was the guy that tallied up all the generations and came to the conclusion, same conclusion, about 4,500 B.C. He brought up that. So, yeah, and it's utter rubbish, of course.
Right.
Because, I mean, you need to go to Peru and see these ancient walls, etc., of you know, Neolithic prehistoric cultures, and all over the planet, and for that matter, and you're astounded at the kind of building projects that went on, oh, maybe 10,000 B.C., maybe 20,000 B.C., maybe 50,000 B.C. Yeah.
Well, and there was Atlantis.
Yeah, Atlantis, and no doubt many other
Lemuria.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is truth in the continent of Lemuria?
Not the way it's said today. I mean, there's no doubt there was huge land tracts off South America that are under the ocean, that can be verified by the divers. And not just there, I mean, all over the planet, actually. You find these places. They even took shots of old ancient villages in the English Channel and in the North Sea, going all the way to Norway. And they found...
So when you say not the way it's talked up today, what do you mean by that?
Well, since the 1800s, you had this big... outpouring of books by high masons to create a new type of culture, put in lots of mysticism and things that grabbed the imagination. And Weishaupt talked about it in his own writings. They would do this, and it was almost a way of creating an interest in what we today would call the New Age.
Well, are you saying that? In other words, that I believe that another name for it, they refer to it as the Land of Mu or something.
Yeah, but they can give all these different.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, right. I understand. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
But allegedly, that Lemuria went under the ocean
mm-hmm.
before Atlantis even existed, or did they? Do they say that they coexisted and then Lemuria went under and then Atlantis?
I think if you took even the Sumerian tablets, see, it's all tossed up between part myth, part history. It's all mixed together. Remember, the ancients, too, they didn't really take the track of time and calendars as we do.
Mm.
I mean, even in ancient Egypt, you had the reigns of the pharaohs, and so a new era began with each pharaoh. So it wasn't like A.D. so-and-so or B.C., you know.
Uh-huh.
It's very confusing, but we do know from the writings of even the Sumerians, they did say that at one time, according to their legends and their own mythologies, great upheavals had happened on the earth, and whole continents had sunk,
right.
While new ones arose up out of the sea. So it was big tectonic shaking up going
mm-hmm.
on at one point, for sure. And then we do have the histories again of the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, who do talk about
Atlantis.
Well, the whole area in the Mediterranean that today we have the remnants, including Terra, where a massive volcano, maybe hundreds and hundreds of miles of a landmass, just sank. And now we have these little disjointed islands on the perimeter.
Right, will you hold that thought? We have to take a break here.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be back right after this. But don't lose your train of thought, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Folks, we'll be back with Alan Watt, in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
You're listening to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back, Alan.
Yeah.
You were talking about the land masses. I was going to ask you about that, if the Greeks had any tales about that.
Yeah, they had records of huge tidal waves coming in when that whole area went underwater in the Mediterranean, basically. Leaving the scattered islands in his wake, basically, which were on the outskirts of it.
Now, where is this?
That's if you look up Terra, T-E-R-R-A, that's the main island where they found all the frescoes of this very wealthy civilization that existed there at one time. Every bedroom that they found, and every room, in fact, had hand-painted frescoes from top to bottom. Lots of work went into all these places. And they know that there were very big merchants as well. They probably ran the ancient system. So, and even the Egyptians had records of tidal waves in other countries as well, about the same area.
Is this concurrent with what Emanuel Velikovsky wrote?
Well, he was more on a global catastrophe.
Yeah, his was, wasn't it?
And yet, sure enough, we've had deep impact with the big, huge meteors coming in, meteorites, and they found craters in different parts of the planet, so, which could definitely have caused certain phenomena across the whole planet. And you've also had occasional place sinking here and there at the same time, or later, or before, as it still happens today. The volcanoes are always coming up, and other ones are going down in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So we always forget that we have an incredible lava core here that's always trying to get out.
Well, you've always taken quite a lot of stock in Velikovsky's writings. Well, I mean, at least in the world, was it worlds in upheaval, worlds in
collision? Mm-hmm.
Worlds in collision, yeah.
I don't go with all his stuff. I mean, he still is speculating to an extent as to what caused it. Was it a comet coming past? That's a possibility. A comet close enough would definitely affect the gravity and even the spin or rotation of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Huge meteor clusters would do the same. You'd have the burning parts falling across the sky. And also you have to decipher the way that the Egyptians wrote about things, because they had a highly imaginative way of describing every catastrophe, even local, you know. And it was a natural form of almost bewailing unfortunate events. They would go off into the extreme to describe them. But they did say that it was so hot as that these burning parts fell from the sky that even some of the cattle were hit and went on fire, you know. So all you can do is take it for what it's worth. We just don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
That is one of the books you recommended quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely good bits and pieces of history wrapped up in there. But again, the rest of it is possible.
I don't know what the rest of it is, though. See, that's
there's so
the
many different things he brings in there which may or may not have happened. And he was trying really to validate a history of Israel in his books.
Okay, well, you know, the other books that he wrote, I noticed that.
Uh-huh.
But in Worlds in Collision,
mm-hmm.
The only thing I saw that I recall was that he said that according to the rabbinical writings, that when that happened, especially it was referring to the time when they said that the sun didn't shine for, it was total darkness for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And of course all this happened according to the Bible, when all these curses that Jehovah was bringing down upon the Egyptians,
mm-hmm.
The children of Israel, the chosen, that it didn't occur to them. It didn't happen to them. And according to Velikovsky in his book, the writings, the rabbinical writings say that 49 out of 50 of them were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that it wasn't just the Israelites leaving that area, it was everybody, because they were trying to find out where the heck that they were, what direction the sun was coming up, etc.
Yeah. And also, as they were coming out, the so-called invaders were supposedly coming in. And it's all terribly confusing.
Yeah.
I think you've stretched it a bit there, to be honest with you. I mean, the whole Bible, there's so much myth in the Bible.
Right.
That when you, and for instance, I mean, you know that one of the, I think it's Isaac, is supposed to talk to the Philistine king, you know. Who fancied his wife?
Who?
And he told them that was his sister.
Oh, you're not talking about Abraham, are you?
Well, I think it could be. However, the fact
Abraham
uh-huh.
passed.
Yeah.
What was her name?
Rachel. Yeah.
Rachel.
Yeah.
No, not Abraham's wife.
Yeah.
But he passed her off as.
That's right. And the thing is, it's all myth. All
right.
That was pretty common in those days to those kind of stories out in legends and myths and so on. Because this thing of the Philistines did not speak, I mean, what language did they speak? Because the Philistines were non-Semitic people. They spoke a different language altogether. So
his wife's name, I'm sorry, his wife's name was Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, yeah, I mean, what language would he even converse in?
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out that through the archaeologists, they're still digging things up all the time, that the Philistines didn't move in there until about 1200 BC. And of course, the story of the founder of this whole thing was supposed to be much, much earlier. So it throws it all out the window.
Yes, yes. Well, the thing I noticed you had mentioned that it gave credence to the Bible stories, and it did.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it did.
Yeah.
As though there really were a group of chosen people over there, and da 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 da, you know.
Well, I think, to be honest, when it comes to religion, everybody who's born into a culture or a group is common. I really do.
You think what?
That everyone born into a group or a religion, regardless of what you're given, I think everyone's been had.
Well, of course, Alan.
And that's been the standard technique for many, many thousands of years. When you read about how the Aryans went into India, and all this Aryan stuff is not Germanic, it's supposed to be the bunch who went into India that the Brahmins are now descended from. It's well documented what they did there. They would study the local populations. Now, there were so many different tribes and different cultures within India and different languages. They studied them, and they put out princes out, just like the feudal system of the Normans later on. And they studied the people, and they made up a religion for that specific people.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't believe how accurately they understood the psychology of the people, and they knew exactly what kind of religion to give the locals.
To give them.
It's fantastic. And then they had them all warring with each other down through the ages when it suited them. And this has been going on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you take a look at the so-called Reformation,
uh-huh.
Well, they brought all the lies uh-huh. right down into the other religions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they had to keep it going. Religion's been a great tool right up to the present time. And it's just phenomenal to realize that even Blavatsky in the 1800s was sent out there to create the next religion, the New Age religion for the world,
mm-hmm.
to blend Christianity and Hinduism together for the upcoming new century and New Age. And then you watch it explode in the 60s and be pushed from the top down through music and movies and novels and books. And here it's out there now. And then Gorbachev writes his book, Towards a New Beginning, you know, in Civilization, telling you that they're creating, he says, I am part of it, he says, and we are creating a new religion for the world. And it must be based on earth worship. And earlier on in the book, he tells you that he's an atheist. So it's the same old ploy they're using over and over again.
Yes.
It's fascinating to see them pull it off. They work in centuries. They plan centuries ahead.
Yeah. I think the overall plan
uh-huh.
was probably, you know, they came up with that a long time ago.
I'm sure.
And it seems to me that every 100 years or so, they sit down. I mean, according to some things, you know, that you read,
yeah.
they sit down. And they see how they're coming along.
They evaluate.
Yes, and they plan for the next century.
Yeah. And even when I look to the old communist system, if they look to the water supply and say that the sewage supply, the road interconnections between cities, each one was given a designated time period. So they had 5-year plans for this, 10
mm-hmm.
for this. And even 100-year plans for other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the exact same formula in the United Nations. The exact same formula as used in the United Nations. Yeah. So the only way you can be certain of pulling it off is to alter the culture, and you've got 100 years or more to do it. So
yes.
it's quite easy to do it when you have all the money in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. And all the think tanks at your disposal. You can easily market ideas to the public. It's like George Bush Sr. said when he was talking about the New World Order in his first speech on September the 11th, of course, 1990, and then he repeated it on September the 11th, 1991. And he said, it's not just a New World Order, it's a big idea. And sure enough, they always export and market the ideas into our heads, our subconscious,
mm-hmm.
through advertising and magazines and movies, and that's how it's all done. It's predictive programming.
I was talking to somebody recently who said that anybody that believes that this is a plan, you know, by man,
uh-huh.
has got to be brain dead.
Uh-huh.
I said, oh, Well, then I guess Alan Watts brain dead too.
Yeah.
And he says, well, you know, he kind of backtracked a little, but basically what it was, you know, trying to confirm that that what's in the Bible was prophecy, and it was, you know, the divine inspired word of God.
Yeah, well, see, God is really playing chess with himself.
Yeah.
He's got the black and the white there, you see, the chessboard, and he planned it all ahead of time, and he knows who's going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. And what I hear is from Christians who are all sincere about it, because they're totally trained in this belief, you see, it's Plato's cave, it's all you know. And so all your conclusions will come from that cave. That's how it works. That's how Plato described it 2,300 years ago. And here's God who's planned everything ahead of time, which is a predestination. And which must mean, too, that God would also know who's going to get saved and who won't before they're even born, you see. Which tends to make you think, well, it doesn't matter what I do, I'll
yeah.
be doing it anyway because it's predicted that
yeah.
way.
Yeah, yeah, Alan.
And then he's going to bring all these famines and plagues and horrors and wars and atrocities upon you. And maybe, just maybe, if he's preordained you to live, you will live. And don't worry about all these horrible things because he's got it all under control anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the most amazing mind bender you could ever imagine.
Yes.
It's incredible. It's Orwell's double think. God is good. He does nasty things and evil things, but he's good.
Well, yes.
Yeah. And of course, as the Masons knew, and they even wrote poems about it, as Jehovah, Jove, by George.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Jehovah.
And that's what they mean by ages. You see, the old age, the ancient age, the golden ages are always tongue-in-cheek referring to, was the time of Saturn. And Saturn, of course, is the father of all the gods. And the Greeks call him Kronos. And the Romans just call him Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And his offspring that took over, his son, the son of God, took over for the next age. That was the Christian age. That was Jupiter,
uh-huh.
which is also called Jove.
Jupiter, Jove, and Jehovah.
That's right. That's right. So now we're going into the next age, you see. And that's the age of Aquarius. So these are all ages written by a mystery religion behind all the religions.
Yes.
And guiding them all to the conclusion. So you can find this all down through history. We are manipulated by those that know.
We had a conversation about, well, what you and I were talking about last Wednesday, because I was being told that, you know, we are going to go into this and they are going to nuke the cities. And
oh, yeah.
I tried to just suggest that, you know, if you don't have a crystal ball, for to say that it's definitely going to happen, and the power of the spoken word, and basically, he said, just because I say something doesn't mean it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then he agreed with what I was saying, and I said, well, then you obviously don't believe that you have that same power within you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, I do. But just because I say what's going to happen doesn't mean I'm helping them bring their plan in. And when you look at how slick they are, Alan,
yeah.
knowing that themselves, I mean the creatures, you know, who planned all this,
yeah.
they know it, as you said.
Yeah.
And so they make the religions, and they get people actually praying
yeah.
for it to happen.
Yeah. And you know, you build up the stress enough, as I mentioned before in one of the programs about, we talked about how the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and these big boys owned the newspapers in England, sat at a table deciding to terrify the British public and say that Hitler, who'd just taken over Germany, was going to gas all the whole of Britain, you know. And
that's what they told the people.
Years, they just every day. It was terrors coming, horrors coming, death from the air, until the public breathed a sigh of relief when the war started, because now something was actually happening. And that's the same technique that's been used today. And all these fools that go around parroting the disinformation that's put out there to terrify them, this is the Pavlovian technique of shocking the dog, you see. Eventually the dog gets shocked in the corner, he gets shocked in the middle of the room, he gets shocked on the other side of the room. It doesn't know where to sit, it just sits and shakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mental breakdown, that's pretty easily controlled. And that's what they're doing to the public right now. And people should know better than to pass this nonsense around. Because if anything did happen, you're not going to be told about it.
What do you mean, Alan?
They would just do it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Like they did on September 11th.
The public, like Francis Bacon said in John Dee, but Francis Bacon wrote about it on his advice to the king. It is best that the people never know the true motives of government. In other words, you keep everything secret. So the public are the last to be told any truth.
Mm-hmm.
So when all this stuff is coming out, oh gee whiz, there's a nuke in a ship off New York Harbor, and these idiots pass all this stuff around, and it never dawns where all this info is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's the disinformation guys at the top that want you to be terrified, and want you to terrify others. Yeah. When you're terrified, you cannot think straight.
Right.
It's a simple technique used for thousands of years. These are sciences. Sciences.
Oh.
And here they are putting out the bird flu programs, the docudramas, to terrify the public that they just know the bird flu is going to get us all this fall.
Well, if you recall, they said it was coming this spring.
That's right. That's right. I did see one going overhead and it was sneezing.
A bird?
It was sneezing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, here it comes.
Yeah, definitely.
But have they changed their story now?
Oh, well, now it's coming in the fall now. But it still has to make the jump between animal to man and then man to man, you see. And out of all the thousand directions it could go, they just know it's going to take this one path.
Yeah. Sometimes do you just get feeling weary, Alan? Do you ever feel...
I'll tell you what it is. I get so many calls from people who followed all the nonsense out there, including all the Anunnaki and the serpent people and everything else all wrapped into one, that to try and deprogram, and they're nervous wrecks. Some of these people have been following the whole New Age movement for 30 odd years or more. They've been to every guru, every group that they've paid money to, and they're totally burned out and totally confused.
Do when you're talking with them, do you emphasize too, though, that there's a lot of truth in what they call, you know, the New Age movement? In other words, there's truth in there.
I don't even go there with them.
Well,
and I'll tell you why. See, they parrot. It's like Lenin said. He says, "We shall win by slogans." Repetition of slogans. And when you're talking to try and deprogram people who've been right into mind control, you're going to hear the same slogans coming out of their mouth as though they're all clones of each other the world over. Because all of these groups that they've been to, meditation schools, are all run by the same bunch at the top. And they just repeat their indoctrinations to you. So to deprogram them, you can't encourage them at the same time. You see, maybe once you've deprogrammed them, you can go touch on something like that. But when you're trying to deprogram, and they phoned you for help, you know, they phoned you up for help, because some of them have been running this incredible roller coaster for 30 odd years or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they've spent every penny trying to get immortality. People should realize that immortality means I'm mortal. Think about it. Right. Uh-huh. And here's all these people.
Well, when you say trying to get immortality,
uh-huh,
do they mean on this earth?
Some of them do, yeah. Some of them are. In fact, that's the biggest fad that's been going on through the New Age movement for years now.
No. Is that right?
Uh-huh. And it's people who live in streets and cities and so on, who truly believe that if they eat all the right stuff and do all the right exercises and and get the right chakras going, they can live forever.
Isn't that a shame that somebody would want to live in this world forever, Alan?
Well, it gives you a clue about the elite. Because they're using science in the hope that they can do it for themselves.
Yeah.
And there you have people at the bottom that if they had the money, they would be doing the same things as the elite.
Remember Steve Ames?
Yeah.
Well, just before he really kind of blew it, he had gotten really going into religion.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not becoming, quote, religious.
Uh-huh.
But he said there had to be something that keeps people so brain dead.
Yeah.
And we talked, and it was just before he went to prison. But he said, Jackie, he was telling me some of the stuff that he dug up. And he said, I'm going to say something, you're going to think I'm nuts. But he said, I have a feeling that some of these creatures have been around here for hundreds of years.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I mean it. I mean, you know, not coming back from another, you know, into another lifetime.
Yeah.
But that they have maybe not attained immortality.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say immorality. They have attained that, haven't they?
That's right.
But that he had a feeling that some of them have been around that long.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I know they have life extension, and even the Rosicrucians in their early books, and if you're lucky enough, you can get an original for a lot of bucks.
What's that?
The early Rosicrucian writings.
Okay.
And that was a sort of precursor. They brought in Freemasonry later on. They did mention that those that worked towards this great work would be given superior medicine, etc., and a longer life.
Uh-huh.
They did mention that at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And the sciences, as I say, there's at least three levels of this matrix. We're on the bottom level. This from professorship down, that's the bottom level of reality as far as the sciences go. And all the media and magazines out there is meant to reinforce the fact that you're on the cutting edge. And when you believe that lie, it never dawns on you that they've got things way ahead of what they tell you. And we know, as I say, that Nick Begich was showing that those mind control gizmos,
yes,
the CIA had back in the 1950s, a whole table full of them, and they could fit into your pocket the size of a pack of cigarettes. And they had to be solid state before the world even heard the term solid state.
Right.
And they could literally put thoughts right into your head. So that was the middle level. That's the middle level, because the controllers never give even their highest weapons to their helpers. So that was the middle level of technology.
Yeah,
simultaneously,
Alan,
you've got the BBC showing flying saucers coming out of Air Force hangars in
right.
Area 51 in the 70s.
I'm going to interrupt you here. We're out of time.
Oh, yeah.
Let our listeners know how they can find you. And
oh, yeah. It's punch in cuttingthroughthematrix.com and see the website and download lots of stuff for free.
Yeah, and your videos.
Yeah, and I'm working on one right now that should help to keep Jason funded.
Oh, good.
Headmaster, and for the money for this next video on the occult, we'll be going to him.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty good.
Good. All right, well, thanks for being with us, Alan.
Yes, of course.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Okay, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.